Welcome to Section 9, where we talk about IT and information security. I'm Damian Hall.
And I'm Dorothy.
And today we're going to be talking about the risk assessment process. What is a risk assessment? How does this reduce risk? And the risk of two-factor authentication, because we're going to kind of use that as an example. And it's going to be a very different example from the one that we give as we talk about our risk assessment process. So the risk assessment is there to help us identify threats. And then from that, it helps us identify the overall risk that we may have to our organization.
So how do you identify a threat? What do you go to say, ooh, this is a threat?
So we kind of talked about this briefly last episode when we talked about fire. That's a threat to organizations, right? You could have a fire within your business, your home, and that's something you may want to take into consideration when you do your risk assessment. So we're going to talk about how that kind of fits into the overall risk assessment process. But what we're trying to do here is stay focused on our goals. And last episode, we said that cybersecurity is all about reducing risk to an acceptable level. But you can't do that until you have identified the risks that you think are going to affect your organization. So that's kind of why we're doing this now, is because we want to stay focused on that. And when we do something for another organization, let's say, for example, we're going to start our business, this is something that you kind of have to do first in order to help them identify certain technologies and controls they may want to introduce into their organization to help them reduce risk to that acceptable level, right?
Sure.
And we talked about this process yesterday, and you kind of had an issue with it because this is all new to you, still kind of new to me in some ways, and we haven't actually applied it to anything. So eventually what we're going to do, you and I, we're going to have to sit down and look at some of the things that we have and run through that risk assessment process.
I wouldn't call what I had yesterday an issue with it. What I was trying to do is like, think of me as the client that doesn't understand risk or knows how their network is at risk. So if you had to explain to me or if you had to educate me on what is a risk to my network and the kind of process that I would have to implement for that, what would you say to me? And also, as a client, I would want to know, how are you dealing with any risk that you're going to expose me when you work on my network by using some kind of third-party thing? Or so, first of all, educate me on what a risk is. I am like, business, totally clueless, go to town.
Yeah, so let's go through this risk assessment process. And we're using the one from NIST, and this is something that we actually have talked about before in the past. I don't know how well we did that, because this was kind of new to us and we hadn't actually used it yet. But we're using a paper from NIST, and they call it the Small Business Information Security, the Fundamentals. And when we originally looked at this a while back, we didn't know what to do with it, because we didn't understand pretty much any of what was in there.
We understood the value of it. What was hard was trying to implement the things they said we had to implement, because there was no map, no clear cut of going from what we were being told that made total sense and it was sound and solid to, okay, that sounds really good. How do you implement this? So that was our problem.
Yeah. And so I spent some time trying to figure out how to actually use this. And once I got kind of an idea, it began to make more sense and the process became a little more clear to me so we could actually use it for something. So here's essentially what you have to do in order to be able to use this process. You have to do data classification. And so what you're going to do is you're going to have super important data, which we'll call high priority. Then you have medium priority, and then you have low priority. And the reason why you do this is because you're going to apply these things to how you organize systems within your organization and how you prioritize them. So high priority data is information that is really sensitive information. You want to keep that safe and secure. You need to have it available all the time.
Your client's data.
So we'll get to that in a minute. So in our case, we're going to have customer data, which is high priority. We're going to have company data. We call that medium priority. And then we have public data, which is low priority. And then you're going to have systems where you say, but wait a minute, it has all the data. So which classification do I use? High, medium, or low? So for all data types or mixed data types, we're going to say that that's high priority because you may have, and it goes with the highest priority data on that system. So if customer data is in the mix, it's high priority. If there's no customer data, but we have company data, company and public, then it's medium priority. You always go with the highest priority. And then we have unknown, right? So if I don't know what kind of data is on a particular system, I'm going to mark that high priority because it could have customer data.
Yeah, we don't know. Just don't know. Mm-hmm.
So you have to check that. Then we have the CIA triad. And the CIA triad comes after you've classified your data. And we'll have an example of this in a minute here so you can kind of see how this all goes together. We have the CIA triad and the threats. So we have confidentiality, integrity, and availability that make up the CIA triad. And your threats are going to go along with that. So if I say, we'll use availability because that's simple. And, you know, I want to make sure that this particular system is available. So let's say, for example, we have a system and we determine that that system has to be there all the time. So then the availability thing is high. I need some things in there that could potentially threaten the availability of that particular system. Power outage. We have those every so often. So the threat is the power outage. And then I can say, okay, is that high, medium, or low priority? Or how likely is that to happen? If I'm plugging my system into the wall, there's no UPS in there, I'm in an area where I typically have power outages, then I'm going to say the likelihood of that actually happening is high. So the overall risk assessment using this method is going to be high. So now I have two things, which we'll get into in a minute here. But that's kind of how you do your threat and risk assessment process. You identify a threat, in this case, a power outage. You say that likelihood of it happening is high. My overall risk is going to be high. And it's something that you kind of have to see. So I'm not entirely sure if we need to show an example of this in a video of some kind or something, because it's a process that can be kind of tricky. But here's how we're going to do this. My example is with our Synology Disk Station. We're going to say it has all data types. So the overall impact to the business is high. So if the Synology Disk Station were to disappear and I have customers, I'm a business, customer data sits on that, the impact to us, Section 9, is high. Because now if a customer calls me and says, hey, I need you to do A, I need the data for A, well, I can't access it because my disk station is offline. It's gone. I don't have access. So that's going to be a huge impact to me at Section 9, to us, because we have a customer that wants us to do something and we can't. So the overall impact of the business is high. Then we go through our CIA triad and threats, confidentiality, integrity, and availability. We'll go back to availability with the power outage. Power's out. I don't have access. So we now have two situations here. Overall impact of the business because of data type, high. Our threat, power outage, is now considered high risk or high likelihood of that happening. So that's high. So now we have two highs, high impact, high risk. Its overall impact of the organization is going to be marked as high. You need to look at this first. So what you then have to say to yourself is the overall risk to this particular organization on this system is high. What are some things that we can do to reduce that risk? So something like a UPS, you add that to the mix, you plug your Synology Disk Station into the UPS, we give ourselves X amount of uptime to kind of survive that power outage. It's not going to be perfect.
Or kind of to shut down things that could get corrupted or broken.
Exactly. So now when we talk about how does this reduce risk, we're identifying the weak points in our system, in the design of our Synology Disk Station, and how we access that. And so we've sort of not gotten rid of the power outage issue, but we've minimized the potential damage because we now have the battery backup that's going to keep us alive. And in small power outages, we may not notice that there's an issue because all of our systems are plugged into that UPS. We're going to have access to the Synology Disk Station. We're going to be able to access the information the customer wants, and we can keep working.
Does it have, how do you do an assessment on, let's say that you have a client and they put some sensitive data in a device that doesn't have, let's say, you know, two-factor authentication, and anybody can just walk into the room and have access to that device. You know, physical security is one thing that you can get them to do, but would you suggest, like, you need to buy something that has the two-factor authentication to be able to protect that data or move the data somewhere else? How would you deal with that?
So you bring up something that it's not on my list, but it's really important. Mm-hmm. So, and this is one of the reasons why we have data classification, because you want to see where is your high risk data, right? So where do we have customer data in our case? Is it on our Synology disk station? Is it on my phone? Is it on my laptop? And so the question you have to ask yourself is, you know, when we talk about confidentiality, there's a chance that we could break confidentiality by doing what you say. Somebody could access the information that shouldn't see that. Now we're talking about a confidentiality issue. So when we talk about that, you want to do least privilege. You also want to limit where the data sits, because if I have it on my laptop and I lose my laptop, well, did somebody see that information that shouldn't have seen it? And that's where you start introducing controls like encryption. Is it on my phone? Should it be on my phone? Is my phone encrypted? So those are some things that you have to take into consideration. And that's how you end up reducing risk, because you evaluate the important things you have, you identify those important things, and you slowly add controls to that and business processes to that. You say, hey, as a business, I don't want to see any customer data on anybody's phone. Now, we may not have that for us, but some organizations could say that. I don't want any customer data sitting on somebody's phone. I don't want any customer data sitting on somebody's laptop. Or we could say, I want all laptops encrypted because they could have customer data on it. So there's lots of ways to look at this, but at least you're identifying the weak points and your high priority stuff and saying, okay, here's where we're weak. Here's how we're going to fix this. Here's where we're high priority. You're having that conversation.
So how do you deal with that, with something like, for example, okay, you got the client data and you're protecting it really well on your network, right? You have it in the right places. Your people don't have access to it unless they need to have access to it. But in the course of providing a service, you need to use a third party vendor or what have you for that. How are you protecting the client then? Because if you have to share some of that confidential client information with a third party vendor, you can answer for how you have your network, but you have no idea how that third party has the information secure or how it secures it. Do you kind of sit down with a third party service provider or whatever it is that you do and say, hey, how do you do this? Or do you expect the client to kind of say, well, you have them sign something saying, hey, you know, we can assure that our data is secure and what have you, but this third party, we, you know, we're not responsible for that. How does that work? Do you know?
So that's something that both parties have to be aware of. And unfortunately, most organizations don't know to ask that question.
Okay.
Hey, I'm working with you, but who are you working with?
Right.
And so it really is the client's job, or let's say, for example, we work with a third party. It's our job to ask the third party, how do you handle our data? And so typically what I will do, like with DigitalOcean, I know they have SOC certifications. We looked into that.
Right.
And that specifies how they handle certain kinds of data. I like the fact that they've gone through that process. That's important to me. I still have to be aware of what kind of information I place on their servers or their systems.
Correct.
I create a VM, but it's on their network. So that's something that I have to take into consideration. And so even though it's the clients, it's, you know, they're the ones that have our stuff, they're not really going to tell you a whole lot unless you ask. And so when we go to our clients, it would be beneficial for us to let them know, because one of the reasons they're asking us is because they don't know how to do this. So it would be beneficial for us to let them know, hey, here's how we're doing things. Is this okay with you? We can modify that and present you with different methods of getting access to your information. And then we can also simplify things a bit. Like if we put information into, let's say, monday.com, we can not use the client's name in the project. And therefore, you can't really associate that information with somebody else. And then if we use kind of generic names for certain things that we're working on, if we choose to manage that inside of Monday, then if, for example, something bad were to happen, we don't have things like passwords inside of monday.com. You know, the passwords need to be where? In LastPass. So for example, if they give us a username and password for us to access things on their network, which they may need to do if we want to do things like risk assessments with Nessus, we have to be careful about how we manage that and be upfront with the customer and say, here's where this password is going to be stored. It's in LastPass, it's encrypted, only you and I have access. So they know what's going on. So those are some things that we're going to have to take into consideration.
So even the information that you do put on monday.com, even if you are not putting the name of the client, some of that information could be useful. So how far does security by obscurity take you?
Well, you have to be careful about that. And those are things that you at least need to have that conversation so that you're aware of that particular risk. And you have identified that so you can make these decisions. And that's where the risk assessment comes into play. It forces you to have the conversation so that you're aware of these things and you can begin to understand, oh, hey, we do have information on laptops that is sensitive. Should we? Right? So those are the kinds of things that I want people to be aware of. Now, when we use the risk assessment in this data classification process, it works really well. But you can also use it for other things, like a business process. So one example I have here is the risk of two-factor authentication. This is kind of a business process. I don't know if it's really a good example of a business process, but it is a process. We're not talking about data classification anymore. We're talking about an authentication process. So in order for me, and I have listed here as examples, Gmail and LastPass. So on Gmail, we have a second factor verification. On LastPass, we have a second factor authentication with Duo. So it's two-factor authentication. And in both cases, they kind of look like two-factor authentication, but Gmail calls theirs two-factor verification. So where does this process happen? Like when you log into Gmail, you put in your username and password, and then what happens?
It asks me if it's me.
And where does that happen?
On my phone.
Okay, so it happens on your phone. Now, when you log into LastPass, you put in your username and password, what happens?
Basically, on LastPass?
Yes.
It just logs me in if I put my username and password.
You put your username and password, and then what happens? Remember, we're using two-factor authentication. So what happens with that second factor?
I get a notification either on my phone or my watch, you know, from Duo.
Correct.
Saying, hey, you know, accept or deny or dismiss, whatever.
Right. So it goes to your phone. If your phone's not actually, you know, the screen's not actually on, it passes that on to your watch and you can approve that process. In both cases with Gmail and LastPass, you have to have that. If you don't have that, you can't get in. So remember that. If you don't have that, you can't get in. That second factor, whether it's verification or authentication, has to be there. So let me ask you this. If your phone goes away, gone, can't find it, it's nowhere to be seen, how do you access your Gmail?
I can sign in from a computer.
Where's the second factor verification? You don't have that.
No, I don't, I guess.
So what about LastPass? You log into LastPass and it says, where's the second factor verification?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have your phone. What do you do?
Yeah, I don't have my phone. I don't have my watch. I guess it's not going to let me in.
So these are things that you have to be aware of. So in this particular situation, in like a few minutes, we've done a risk assessment on an authentication process, and we've identified a risk. Risk is, if I lose my phone, I don't know how to get into my stuff. And that's huge. So the risk assessment doesn't have to be fancy. It can be simple. And it can identify huge risk within your organization. And by the way, if you don't know what to do about your lost phone, I don't either. I don't know what the process is to get back into Gmail if I lose my phone. I don't know what the process is to get access to LastPass if I lose my phone. You have access to LastPass and you can change things because you're an admin. But let's say, for example, something bad happens, we both lose our phones, what do we do? And while you do have access to LastPass, the admin side, you don't have access to my Gmail. So how do I get back into my Gmail?
The thing is, I think if I had lost my phone, I can still get into my Gmail because I know my password for my Gmail. So I would get in and I would get a notification on my Gmail that I'm signing in another computer.
It still wouldn't work. You have to have the second factor verification. If that's the reason it's there to prevent somebody who has your username and password from getting in. So when you log in, it's going to say, where's that second factor? Even though it's verification, it still wants that. If you don't provide it, you don't get in. Just like Duo. If you don't provide that second factor authentication, you're not getting in.
Could you get in if you had a tablet?
No, you can't. Where's the second factor? I can give you my LastPass username and password. You can try to log in as me, but no, you're never going to get in because
I
have to approve it.
No, I'm not because you have to approve it. I understand that. But if I go ahead and I try to sign in from a computer and I have a tablet and I can install like Duo on it, on the tablet, it's going to ask me, right?
No.
Why?
Because the tablet has to be approved or authorized to get the notification from Duo. It has to be an authorized device.
Okay, so then what we need to do in case we lose our phones is we need to have a secondary device that is authorized in there to have that possibility of getting in.
Correct. So what we need is a backup process. And we don't have that backup process yet. But the whole point of all of this and the reason why we're doing this little exercise is to point out the potential risks that you may have within your organization and how that risk assessment process can help you identify high-risk areas that you may not even have, that you may not have thought of, that was like not even on your radar. Like here we have two-factor authentication, two-factor verification, and we've just identified that our phones are mission-critical to everything we do. You can't get your email. Well, what do you do now? You can't get into LastPass. Well, that's where all our passwords are. What do you do? So we have to come up with controls, a process to make sure that, hey, if I lose my phone, if my phone dies, I drop it in the water, it doesn't work anymore, I have a way to get back into LastPass. I have a way to get back into my Gmail. So thoughts about all of this?
No, I mean, I'm glad you're bringing this up because, you know, I think we should have done that when we set up the two-factor authentication. I think we should have done that. And we need to actually add that to the part of the process that we developed on that.
Exactly. And by the way, this is something that a lot of people are not taking into consideration. They don't see it that way. They say, oh, look at this.
I didn't give it another thought because I was convinced, just like I was telling you a minute ago, I can just log in my email and do that. But you know, you're right. It is going to ask me for the verification and, you know, I mean, I don't know why we didn't think about doing that.
And that's one of the reasons why when people ask me about using encryption, like, oh, encryption, it's good stuff. Well, yes, it is. But keep in mind, you have to manage that. So like with our backup in the cloud, it's encrypted. It's great. It's there. It's perfect. But only if you can unencrypt it. And that's why in one of our episodes, we talked about the fact that we didn't have the recovery process documented very well. And because we didn't have that documented very well, I was a little concerned that I wasn't going to be able to decrypt the files when I downloaded them. And therefore, our backups would be useless. Even if they're there, I can't open them.
Right.
So you have to have that understanding of the technology to be able to say, this is how it works. Oh, by the way, here's where some of your risks are.
Well, availability becomes very important in this aspect.
It does.
You know, so.
So anything else you want to add to that?
No, I know what my next project's going to be the minute we get off the microphones, because it's like, are you kidding me? How long have we been doing this and not taking care of it? That's just right down scary.
It is. And so your phone better be tied to your hip. Because if it's not there, you can't get your Gmail. So these are the kinds of things that I want people to be aware of, that the risk assessment process, whether you're doing it by data classification? Are you doing it by process like we did with our phones and our two-factor authentication? These are something that or things that you really need to do so you're aware of where things are in your organization in terms of your data. You don't want to be that organization that lost data to somebody because they found your laptop and it had customer data and it was unencrypted. And you don't want to be in those situations where you lose your phone and now you can't get your Gmail because you have two-factor verification or your customers' passwords are stuck in LastPass and you can't get them because you don't have access to LastPass because you do two-factor authentication.
And I think there's also a lot of people that don't use the two-factor authentication for that very reason. You know, they're like, oh, well, I don't want to bother with that and kind of, you know, have a backup plan.
Well, two-factor authentication is recommended. It's what you should have. Mm-hmm. You just have to understand the risks involved.
Right. And I'm just telling you, I mean, I just think a lot of people don't even want to bother with that.
No, they don't. And that's why I think that even though some of our business ideas may sound crazy and trying to do security for others may sound a bit crazy because we're not doing anything fancy, a lot of organizations can't do fancy, but they're not doing the basics.
But here's something. Until we start implementing some of these things, sometimes we don't think about the rest of the process. And that to me is really concerning.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't know how to do these yet because I haven't looked.
Yeah.
But now that we're thinking about these kinds of things, like I said, took me 5-10 minutes to think about this process. But it's because we're thinking about that risk assessment process. We went through it a little bit. I can say, oh, what about other things? Oh, look at our phones. Instantaneously popped up in my head. And I was like, okay, let's evaluate this kind of in a quick risk evaluation process, you know, and that's what I came up with. So it doesn't have to be a fancy process. It's just there to help you identify areas in which you should be aware of potential threats and overall risk within your organization. And we'll be talking about this more as we do it for ourselves and possibly for others as well. So I think that's it for now. If you want to take a look at our show notes, you can go to OSNAP at section9.us, and we will have some links in the show notes to our risk assessment process. And then if you want to send us an email, you have questions about this, you can send us email at info@section9.us. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.